tall trees.
KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Senate Finance Committee is due to vote Tuesday on the nomination of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. for Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. His path to confirmation by the full Senate is uncertain. At a hearing last week, Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska pressed Kennedy on his support for the Indian Health Service, an often overshadowed agency within the health department. The Indian Health Service provides care for more than 2 million American Indians and Alaska Natives from the country's 574 federally recognized tribes in 37 states. Kennedy says he plans to elevate the importance of indigenous health.
I'm going to bring in a Native at the assistant secretary level. I'd like to get him actually designated as a assistant secretary for the first time in American history. Ensure that all of the decisions that we make in our agency are conscious of their impacts on the First Nations.
Kennedy says Alaska is one of his favorite places and that he spent time with Gwich'in people in Arctic Village. Murkowski called Kennedy a health influencer, and she urged him to use his platform to increase public confidence in vaccines. He has for decades cast doubt on their safety. Public health experts say vaccine skepticism is lowering vaccination rates and risks the return of illnesses like polio and measles. Energy inequity is evident for Native communities across Arizona. It's estimated that 21% of Navajo homes and 35% of Hopi homes lack access to electricity. Alex Gonzalez has more.
62-year-old Leonard Celestia is a member of the Hopi tribe in Arizona and didn't have electricity in his house for years. He adds that for much of his life, he adapted to an off-grid world and found light in the sun, kerosene lamps, gas-run generators, flashlights, and other battery-operated devices. That was before Native Renewables came along. It's a nonprofit that offers free solar energy systems on the Navajo and Hopi reservations. They determined Celestia's home was eligible.
Systems carrying the TV, the DVD player, and the small light. We could watch movies all night.
Celestia says he's appreciative of Native Renewables for bringing light into his life. In addition to the women-led organization installing off-grid solar systems with battery storage for free, they also aim to educate Native communities on solar energy and provide workforce development to ensure Native folks have the needed skills to install and maintain systems for years to come. Celestia says despite there being transmission lines running through Navajo and Hopi lands, the power hasn't been for them. That's a result of the Rural Electrification Act, which would allow farmers to access low-cost loans to build power lines and usher in electricity. The Native communities were excluded. Then in 1966, Congress enacted a ban on development for land the Navajo and Hopi people were contesting. That ban wasn't lifted until 2009.
Hopi families out there are without the basic things, especially electricity, and in many cases, indoor plumbing, water. And that's almost like 10 times on the Navajo side. Like I said, their population is in the thousands, where ours is just a mere 20, 25,000.
Since 2015, Native Renewables has created 19 jobs for people from the Navajo Nation and Hopi tribe. Former President Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act awarded the group several million dollars in federal funding. This story was produced with original reporting by Yesenia Funes with Atmos.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing millions of dollars of scholarships to Native students every year. Applications are accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND.
DT Track, your healthcare partner, provides access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. More at dt-track.com who support this show.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Their Navy and Coast Guard responds in defense of our marine borders. These are significant partnerships.
President Trump's proposed tariffs on Canada could have wide-ranging impacts for Alaska. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, February 4th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, legislators meet with the governor's office to negotiate a compromise on education reforms and funding.
We're really early on in trying to find common ground, but I will say that it's a room full of really good intentions.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Subsistence is important to many rural Alaskans. If it's important to you, consider applying to serve on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council. Councils provide information and recommendations to the Federal Subsistence Board on subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing. Apply by Sunday, February 16th. More information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@ios.doi.gov. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
President Donald Trump sparked widespread concern in Alaska over the weekend when he announced steep tariffs on imports from the United States' three largest trading partners. By Monday morning, Trump had partially paused the policy, but that hasn't stymied worries in Alaska. The tariffs could dramatically impact the state if they go forward. At stake is everything from grocery and timber prices to the economies of border towns like Haines and Skagway. For the Alaska Desk, Avery Elfelt has the story.
Alaska is particularly vulnerable to looming tariffs on goods imported from Canada. That's due in large part to the state's unique proximity to Canada and its reliance on the country for timber, agricultural products, and more. Kevin Berry chairs the economics department at the University of Alaska Anchorage.
We're facing potentially higher costs from any good that's produced and sold from Canada, as well as smaller markets for our own goods. There's also the potential for disruption when it comes to the Alcan or transportation to Lower 48.
But Alaska stands to lose a lot from the China tariffs, too. Gregory Wolf, the executive director of the World Trade Center of Alaska, says China has been the state's top trading partner for much of the last 15 years. China already responded to Trump's tariffs by imposing tariffs of its own on U.S. imports. Wolf says the back and forth means Chinese consumers will pay more for products that U.S. companies want to sell them. Meanwhile, Americans, including Alaskans, will spend more on countless Chinese goods.
I don't think it's clear to many Americans or Alaskans who pays these tariffs. It almost sounds, if you listen to the president, that China will write a check to us. That never happens. It's never happened. It will never happen. The people who pay the tariff are the people in America who import the goods from China.
The tariffs came from an executive order on Saturday that placed 25% tariffs on Canadian and Mexican goods and 10% tariffs on Chinese goods. Trump's aim, to push the three countries to curb the flow of undocumented immigrants and drugs including fentanyl into the U.S. There's not a lot that state lawmakers can do about tariffs proposed by the president. But Senate Majority Leader Kathy Geisel, a Republican from Anchorage, is currently drafting a resolution to formally oppose the policy. She says the tariffs would increase prices on a range of goods and necessities.
Here in Alaska, that means a lot in terms of housing costs and, of course, groceries.
In a place where the cost of living is already exorbitant, that's bad news. But Geisel says the tariffs also pose a major threat to something else, Alaska's crucial and longstanding relationship with its only neighbor, including as it relates to military defense.
They join our Air Force in responding when Russian or Chinese aircraft are threatening our air borders. Their Navy and Coast Guard responds in defense of our marine borders. These are significant partnerships that are being jeopardized by the proposal of these tariffs.
Remote communities located close to the border could be hit particularly hard. That's because their cost of living is already exorbitant, and they rely more heavily on goods coming from Canada. Consider Skagway, which sits just 15 miles from the Canadian border. Residents and businesses in the coastal tourist town frequently go to Whitehorse, 2 hours away, for groceries and other products. Orion Hansen, a builder and a member of the Skagway Assembly, says he purchases supplies in Whitehorse for most of the homes he builds. He's worried that tariffs, assuming they take effect, would make doing so more complicated and expensive.
As a builder, I have a lot of concerns about how much lumber prices would go up. I think steel prices would go up. I think concrete prices would go up. Let alone if fuel prices go up, that's going to affect every facet of the economy.
The tariffs do have the potential to disrupt businesses like Hansen's, depending on how much money they spend on Canadian goods. But the tariffs are less likely to impact residents who drive to Whitehorse for groceries. That's because they're meant to target larger operations. The tariffs could have a sweeping set of other impacts, depending on their final form and how Canada responds. They could, for instance, impact tour operators or other businesses if Canada retaliates by imposing fees for using Canadian highways. The nitty-gritty details of the tariffs remain to be seen, as does whether they'll even take force. But Hansen says the stakes are high.
Cost of living is very expensive in Skagway, and I'm concerned that this would exacerbate that and make it worse and make it harder to live here year-round.
The proposed tariffs on Canada and Mexico are paused through February to allow for negotiations over steps the countries will take to crack down on border security and drug trafficking. The tariffs on Chinese products took effect Tuesday. China responded by announcing its own tariffs on coal, crude oil, and other U.S. imports. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
Lawmakers are working to hammer out a compromise on an education bill that could avoid the governor's veto. Governor Mike Dunleavy convened the group, which includes members of his staff as well as the House and Senate's multi-party majority caucuses and Republican minorities. At a news conference this afternoon, Anchorage Democratic Senator Bill Wilikowski said he's hopeful that lawmakers will work out a deal.
I feel like this morning was a productive conversation. I think, you know, we talked kind of in broader pictures about what we want education in Alaska to look like. And we'll continue the discussion and see where it goes.
Increasing state funding for public education is a major priority for the Democrat-heavy majorities in the House and Senate. They're looking to avoid a repeat of last year when Dunleavy vetoed an omnibus education bill. Legislative leaders are pursuing bills that would significantly boost funding to districts under the traditional formula. Dunleavy, meanwhile, has proposed modifying the formula to emphasize correspondence and technical education along with other reforms. Sitka Independent Representative Rebecca Himshute, one of the negotiators for the multi-party House majority, says it's too soon to say whether lawmakers and the governor will find common ground. But she says everyone's negotiating in good faith.
We're really early on in trying to find common ground, but I will say that it's a room full of really good intentions. So that's an optimistic start.
Lawmakers say they're hesitant to describe specifics of the closed-door meetings, but for now, Wasilla Republican Senate Minority Leader Mike Schauer says the early signs are positive.
We were all wondering, would we be able to, will we have any confrontation up front where we were too far apart? It sounds like there was none of that, so that is it sounds like we're in a good start to go. There's a money side and a policy side, and everybody was willing to discuss, so this is a good first step.
Dunleavy and legislative leaders have each said they hope to work through negotiations quickly in order to allow school districts time to plan their budgets for the next school year. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, residents in Eagle prepare to pamper the Yukon Quest Alaska mushers.
All the information is hanging on the wall. You should have already done that. When the musher comes in, point to the menu and say, this is what we have to eat. What would you like?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
How does Alaska's land fund community services for Alaskans with behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities? Through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The Trust Land Office manages 1 million acres of lands to maximize revenue generation, with earnings supporting millions of dollars in trust grant making each year to help improve mental health outcomes for beneficiaries statewide. More at AlaskaMentalHealthTrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Anchorage police shot and killed a man who was reportedly walking down Tudor Road waving a gun this afternoon. This is the first fatal police shooting in the city this year. In a statement, police said the man was shot near East Tudor Road and Piper Street around 1:20 p.m. APD spokesman Chris Barraza says officers initially responded to reports that he was pointing his gun at people and cars.
We received multiple phone calls from multiple different people that he was going in and out of traffic, like pointing his gun towards cars, towards individuals walking.
Barraza says responding officers reported seeing the man continuing to wave his firearm when they arrived on scene. At a press conference, Police Chief Sean Case said an officer got out of his car and demanded that the man drop his gun.
The officer ordered the subject to take his hand off the gun. And shortly after providing that command, the officer fired approximately 5 rounds.
The man was declared dead at the scene. Case says it's unclear if the man had pointed his firearm at the officer. He says the incident was caught on body camera footage, and the footage will be released at a later date. When asked if the man had fired his weapon, Barraza said, quote, "not that we're aware of." He says no officers were harmed in the shooting. This marks the third person shot by Anchorage police this year. The other two were wounded and face felony charges. Last year, Anchorage police shot 8 people, killing 5 of them. It's a small casino with only electronic machines, but it's the first gaming hall to open in South Central Alaska. The native village of Aklutna owns and operates it, the tribe's first step towards building a larger permanent home for its gaming operations. So far, gambling has taken place by invitation only, but as KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, the tribe opened its gaming hall to the public yesterday.
Gambling has come to Birchwood, just a short drive from Anchorage, where there are now 85 wall-to-wall electronic gambling machines. When the machines are in play, you hear music. They're housed in a big room that's warm and snug and smells like brand new carpet. If there are windows, you can't see them.
Wolf Run is definitely popular. Stinkin' Rich, which is right around the corner here, is pretty popular.
Ryan Walker manages the gaming hall for the tribe. He says these machines not only have the same names as those that are popular in Las Vegas, but they're designed to have their look and feel.
So games in Vegas are what you call Class 3 machines, and Class 3 machines are based off of a random number generator embedded in the machine itself.
But these are Class 2 bingo machines with flashy electronic bingo cards. The top payout is typically $8,000, but it is possible to win more on machines programmed to give out progressive awards, though not likely. Walker has a lot of experience managing gaming halls in Southern Nevada and California, but this one stands out.
Certainly I've been involved in expedited projects, but this is by far the quickest one.
The Chinon Gaming Hall is made up of trailers bolted together in just 4.5 days, as soon as the tribe got the final green light from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. But Aaron Leggett, president of the Native Village of Aklutna, says the project has been a long time in the making. He calls the opening a historic day for the tribe.
Finally, the Native Village of Aklutna is able to fully participate in the economic growth of our city.
There were decades of legal battles to get to this point. The building sits on a Native allotment that a year ago did not have the necessary Indian country status to allow gambling. But last year, the U.S. Interior Department changed its Alaska policies, and the tribe got final approval from the outgoing Assistant Secretary of Interior just days before the Trump administration took over. Opponents of the project say the tribe rushed to open to prevent Trump from shutting it down. But Leggett says there were other more pressing reasons, mainly to recoup the costs as quickly as possible, and that includes mounting legal bills.
What development in Alaska doesn't have critics? If you can tell me one development that's ever happened in Alaska that doesn't have critics.
The tribe is currently being sued by a group of neighboring property owners. Leggett says the tribe will do its best to be a good neighbor and make the safety of the area a top priority. It also plans to work with the city to upgrade the road. Leggett says all of the land that is now Anchorage once belonged to the Aklutna tribe, and they were never truly able to benefit from that until now. He says the land the gaming hall sits on was homesteaded by his great-grandfather in 1928.
So we've watched the neighborhood grow. The only thing that existed here before that was the Alaska Railroad by a few years, not by too many. So as far as being the neighbors, we're the original neighbor.
The neighbors in this case have been complaining to the Birchwood Community Council. Debbie Oceander, the council's co-chair, says it plans to make a formal request to the Anchorage mayor and assembly to do more to address the potential tax burden. Oceander says neighbors are worried about the tribe's tax-exempt status, even though it's offered to pay for some of the costs in city services that may arise from its gaming hall. Oceander says these costs need to be tracked.
We evaluated that. We appreciate it. But we are hoping and asking the assembly to make it a point to accurately assess those costs.
For the tribe, there's the cost of not going forward, of not having a new stream of income to fund its programs and improve the lives of its members. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
The Alaska Attorney General filed a lawsuit today against the U.S. Interior Department, the National Indian Gaming Commission, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs over their decision to approve the Aklutna Tribe's gaming hall. The suit claims the federal agencies abused their legal authority and asked the U.S. District Court to vacate what it calls their, quote, unlawful decisions. Meanwhile, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game will not be opening a new commercial fishery for Magister Squid in Southeast Alaska yet. That's after the State Board of Fisheries voted on the proposal on Saturday in Ketchikan. KRBD's Jack Darrell has more.
Richard Yamada proposed the idea to the board. Yamada owns a sport fishing lodge near Juneau and helps lead the International Pacific Halibut Commission. He told the board that he's spent years investigating if there's a market for the squid.
It's the most abundant squid in Alaska waters, but very underutilized.
Yamada said there's a strong global demand for Magister squid. It's a staple of restaurant menus in Japan. But the biggest exporters of the squid are China and Russia. And Yamada said that due to geopolitical factors, those markets are on a downswing.
They're having a lack of squid right now. And there's an opportune time to Alaska to get into the squid market because of the economies and the lack of high demand for squid.
Yamada won a grant from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration a couple years ago to look into making a market for Alaska's Magister squid. He said he's been testing the quality of his local squid catch on sushi chefs in Japan and Los Angeles. One of those chefs was Takeshi Suda, a sushi chef in Japan's Yamagata Prefecture. Yamada shared a letter from the chef saying that Alaska's squid's thickness, clean flavor, and consistent white color makes it good for serving raw as sashimi. Or the chef wrote, grilling or frying the tender leg meat. Magister squid are usually reddish-brown and can grow to over 2 feet long. They're native to the waters of the North Pacific, like around Japan, the Aleutian Islands, and Southeast Alaska. Yamada said they usually only live about 1 year. There used to be a pretty big Japanese trawl fishery for Magister squid in the Bering Sea in the Gulf of Alaska. Yamada said they were harvesting thousands of tons every year until the U.S. pushed the foreign fishermen out of federal waters in the late 1970s. Yamada claimed that opening up commercial squid harvests could provide another revenue stream for struggling commercial fishermen and cut down on the squid eating more prized catches like salmon and crab. Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang applauded Yamada's ingenuity, but he said without biological or catch data or any real idea of how many of these squids are in Southeast waters, the department can't really establish a sustainable management plan.
I think there's some fundamental questions. I think we can probably do something in a couple of years where we figure out that sustainability piece and also the market piece.
Board member Curtis Chamberlain also questioned the market itself, fearing a crash if China and Russia resume exports.
If you do it wrong, you can do a lot of long-term damage. There is a potential, but I really like this. So I'm a no, but we're not far away from something else.
Southeast dive fisherman Seth Rockwell spoke in support of Yamada's proposal. He said that opening up this fishery would create enough volume to start researching and gathering that data on how to manage it properly.
He's talking about a jig fishery, which is very low impact fishery, has very low chance of overharvest. And so opening up a jig fishery may expand this out just a little bit more. to allow them to get more data, to allow this to move to the next step to be a viable fishery.
Board of Fisheries Chair Marit Carlson Van Dort says she's excited about the idea, even if she feels like it isn't quite ripe yet.
I think one of the elements that I would like to see presented perhaps in the future, because I don't know that I can support it at this time, but I'm really, really interested in this, is what the harvest need would be to sort of establish a market and production requirements and all the things.
Nearly every member of the board expressed excitement about the idea as a pleasant surprise and something they hope to hear more about during their next meeting on Southeast Alaska fisheries in 2028. The proposal failed 5-2. At the Board of Fisheries in Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, providing telecommunication services to tribal health organizations and nonprofit rural health providers, enabling telehealth services for Alaskans. More at gci.com/healthcare. The Federal Subsistence Board is seeking young leaders involved in subsistence and interested in learning the federal regulatory process to fill non-voting seats on the Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Interested Alaska residents 18 to 25 are to submit a letter of interest, including two references, by Sunday, February 16th, 2025. More information at 907-444-1376. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Snow crabs started hitting on Alaska's docks again last month for the first time in nearly 3 years. Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist Ethan Nichols says there are currently almost 10 vessels registered in the Bering Sea commercial fishery.
The fleet is just getting started for the most part. Fishing so far, the reports from the grounds, there seems to be good numbers of nice new shell large snow crab on the far northern portions of the grounds, similar to the last few snow crab fisheries we've had.
The fishery reopened this fall after a two-year closure due to low stocks. The first delivery wasn't until mid-January. Alaska snow crabs are historically fished in the new year and into the early spring. Nichols says right now the number of keepers per pod is somewhat low, but that will increase as the season progresses.
That's only coming from a handful of our first deliveries. And that includes, some prospecting by vessels early on in the season. It sounds like, from what we know so far, that the highest CPUEs are being seen on the northern portion of the grounds. And as vessels get more dialed in on those hot spots or those productive areas of fishing, they'll be coming in with, full loads of crab that are more reflective of the hot spots on the grounds.
Fishermen were allotted about 4.7 million pounds of snow crab this season. It's pretty low compared to historic catch limits. About 30% of that had been harvested as of Friday afternoon. Normally, some of that harvest would be processed in St. Paul, but this year, everything is coming to Unalaska because Trident didn't open their plant on the Pribilof Island, which is the only processor in the northern region. Nichols says it sounds like processing the extra crab in Unalaska is going smoothly. He says it's made some of their work at Fish and Game a little easier, too.
Just made our sampling a little bit more streamlined, really, in terms of just travel logistics this time of year. Not having to battle getting in and out of the Pribilofs with weather and flight availability and all that. It's just simplified our sampling efforts.
Nichols says he expects to see a total of about 15 vessels participate in this year's fishery. Fish ticket prices are coming in around $3 per pound. Meanwhile, there are 10 vessels registered for the Western Bering Sea Tanner Crab fishery. About 10% of that total harvest has been caught so far. Crabbers have until the end of March to catch the Tanner Crabs. And the Pacific Cod fishery in state waters opened up last week. Nichols says he expects about 20 vessels to kick that off. They have a harvest of roughly 44 million pounds, which is just about the same as last year's catch limit. Meanwhile, the town of Eagle, on the Alaska side of the border with Canada, was a waypoint on the International Yukon Quest Trail for decades. But in the administrative chaos from the pandemic, race officials cut the stop. This year, Eagle will be a checkpoint on the trail again. Mushers will rest at the town's old schoolhouse after completing one of the most grueling sections of the trail before continuing on to the finish line in Tok. For the Alaska Desk, Shelby Herbert tells us that townsfolk of all ages are working to give mushers the warmest welcome they can muster.
Okay, Christy Robbins is the Yukon Quest Checkpoint Coordinator for Eagle. She's also the principal at the local school. Just outside the empty checkpoint shelter, Robbins is teaching high school PE. A handful of teenagers gather around while she walks them through how to greet mushers as they arrive. They listen attentively, pink clipboards clutched in their gloved hands.
Hey, when a musher goes in, you should already have called in their time to the race headquarters. All the information that's hanging on the wall, you should have already done that. And when the musher comes in, point to the menu and say, this is what we have to eat. What would you like? And you can read it off
then,
to them.
Then Eagle Community School teacher Meg Helmer comes tearing down the snowy lane in a sled pulled by her three dogs, Tetlin, Celine, and Esther.
They're not as disciplined as real race dogs.
The students leash the dogs and ask Helmer a series of questions, documenting her answers on their clipboards. It's practice for the real thing. The teens will be some of the first people to receive the Yukon Quest's remaining competitors. Freshman Flora McDougall can barely contain her excitement.
It's going to be fun, but they're like, you know, they're going to be in and out. So, like, come up the river, stop 8 hours, out again, you know. It's just going to be a week. So while I'm here, I'm going to try to just do my best, make sure they have everything they need and stuff.
When competitors in the 550-mile race reach Eagle, students will make sure they have all their appropriate gear, show them where to take their mandatory 8-hour break, and wake them up when it's time to hit the trail again. They'll also cook for them, as well as all the other people following the quest, veterinarians, race officials, and press, like me. Later, in the school kitchen, spaghetti noodles foam in big pots, ground beef simmers in marinara sauce. Students and faculty scurry around, cooking heaps of food for a big community dinner. Sophomore Vivi Muldoon is in the middle of the fray, slathering bread rolls with butter. She says this isn't her first time working on the Yukon Quest Chow line.
Our mom would always make brownies for the quest, and she would set out signs. It would say, like, brownies 1 mile, or did someone say brownies? So that was what we would do traditionally every year, and we would set them on this tote on the river, and in the tote there would be these bags with all of the mushers' names on the bags. They started talking about it, and they would all get excited every year for their brownies.
But all that food has to get washed down with something. Eagle resident Lance Cosma is doing his part to welcome the Yukon Quest. He's filtering the checkpoint's source of potable water to make it taste better.
Busy, it's weird. It tastes like a flat LaCroix. Sometimes I'll brush my teeth with that water, just rinse and spit, but I don't drink it straight. It never made me sick, but, you know, drinkable, but it tastes a little funny.
Later that evening, dinner is served in the school cafeteria. Locals and strangers sit side by side, loading up on carbs and lots of cheese. Then a few people break out a guitar, a fiddle, a ukulele. Reporting in Eagle, I'm Shelby Herbert.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Avery Elfelt in Haines, Eric Stone in Juneau, Rhonda McBride in Anchorage, Jack Darrell in Ketchikan, Maggie Nelson in Unalaska, and Shelby Herbert in Eagle. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Tim Rocky is our producer. And I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning. With reporters covering every corner of Alaska, you can be sure you're up to date on the stories that matter to Alaskans. Join me, Ava White, for Alaska Morning News, weekdays on your local public radio station.
Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
This is a song by the band, not this band, but...
The other band, the band. I wish we could take credit for it, but we can't. But sometimes people think when I say from the band, you know what I mean.
Well, Bessie was more than just a friend of mine. We shared the good times and the bad. Many years have since passed me by. I still recall the best thing I ever had. Now I'm going down the road to see Bessie. Oh, see her soon. Just going down the road to see Bessie Smith. When I get there, I'm wondering what you'll do. Now all the crazy things I had to try, well, I've tried them all and then some. If you're lucky one day, you will find out where it is that you
Thank you. This is another song by our friend Jeff.
Turn my vocals up. I wrote the song as a message for help on behalf of anybody finding themselves. I wrote this letter to numb your pain, 'cause every day I wake up I'm feeling the same. I got issues just like you got issues. I've been hurt, I've seen the scar tissue. If I showed you, would you run away? Do I gotta hide them for you to wanna stay? Do I even need you? Should I leave you? Do I gotta be you just to please you? Do I say I'm all good when I bleed you through my heart? Quit tearing mine apart. I'm not afraid to
keep it going. Gotta keep my head up, cause life is about. Alright, check this out. Look. Life is about making mistakes. It's also about trying to be great.
Right.
Do not let failure scare you away. I know you fed up, you fall, get up. It's all in us. I can speak about it cause I did it.
True.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's the exhibit. It's my life. Look a little closer, you can see the highlights. Gold ain't always golden, but I told him. Look at all the years I've been waiting for a moment. Shed a lot of tears, just a smile in the morning. Tell me, could you love me? Tell me, could you love me? Tell me, could you love me if I told you
I swear, I swear.
Yeah, who feels like I did, never the cool kid.
This song's for anybody
who fought their way through, always remain true.
This song's for anybody.
The ones who trying to get it, the ones who dreaming and living.
This song's for anybody.
The song, the song, the song, the song, the song, the song. The song. Keep it going, gotta keep my head up, cause life is about.
Here's the thing, we started up friends. It was cool, but it was all pretend. Yeah, yeah, since you've been gone. You're dedicated, you took the time. Wasn't long till I called you mine. Hear me say, it's how I picture me with you.
spend my nights just loving you. Well, my love was never enough. Before too long, you're running on. You'll never find, you'll never find another love like mine. No matter how hard you try, you'll never find another love like mine. The world is a cold, hard place. So many players looking for that pretty face. And maybe someday you'll look back on what we had. This memory will make you feel worse than sad. You'll never find, you'll never find another love like mine. No matter how hard you try, you'll never find another love like mine. And I don't know that ever I could love again. All I know is I give you all the love that's ever been. My love for you will never fade, even though you put me through all this pain. When one loves with all his heart, he bleeds forever when it's torn apart. You'll never find, you'll never find another love like mine. No matter how hard you try, you'll never find another love like mine. Yeah, no matter how hard you try, you'll never find another love like mine.
Down.
Love and lust.
Down. All of us.
Give me a run for my money. There was nobody, no one that would run me.
Another world premiere.
So give me a run for my money. Sipping bubbly, feeling lovely. Living lovely. Just love.
I wanna be with you. 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 I wanna be with you.
Lovely.
If I'm in my mind at work, would you still
lovely.
Keep it 100, I'd rather you trust me than to
lovely.
Keep it a whole 100, don't got you, I got nothing. Hey, I got something,
I got something.
Hold up. We gon' function,
function.
Hey, no assumption,
no assumption.
Hey, feeling like Tyson
like
with it. Knock it out twice, I'm with it. Only for the night, I'm kidding. Only for life, yeah, only for life, yeah, only for life, let's get it. Hit that shoulder lean, I know what's coming over me. Backstroke overseas, I know what you need. Already on 10, all money come in, all feeling go out. This feeling don't drought, this party won't end. If I didn't ride blade on curve, would you still? If I'm in my mind at work, would you still? Keep it 100, I'd rather you trust me than to. Keep it a whole 100, don't got you, I got nothing.
Run for my money. There was nobody, no one that would run me. So give me a run for my money. Sipping bubbly, feeling lovely. Living lovely. Just love.
I wanna be with you. I wanna be with you. I'm on the way, we ain't got no time to waste. Poppin' your gum on the way, and mine away. I don't want pressure, you none. I want your blessing today. Oh, by the way, open the door, by the way. Tell you that I'm on the way, I'm on the way. I know connection is vague. Pick up the phone for me, babe. Damn it, we jamming. That attitude for your nanny. Curving your hip from your mammy. Remember Gardena, I took the
video camera. I know Tapo be mad at me. I had to do it. I want your body, your music. I bought the big one to prove it. Look what you made. Told you that I'm on the way. I'm like an exit away. Yep. If I didn't ride blade on curve, would you still have me? If I'm in my mind at work, would you still have me? Keep it 100, I'd rather you trust me than to keep it all 100. Don't got you, I got nothing.
Run for my money. There is nobody, no one that'll run me. So give me a run for my money. Sipping bubbly, feeling lovely. Living lovely.
When the pain cuts you deep, and your heart makes you feel like a fool. I promise you will see that I will be remedied. Or too deep for me to swim to you. Come whatever, I'll be the shelter that won't let the rain come through. Your love, it is my truth, and I will always love you, love you. When the pain, when the night keeps you from sleeping, just look.